Welcome to the ABCA's podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Brownlee. New podcast sponsor is Aware Sports. Are you looking to improve your use of video for player development, live streaming, instant replay, or opponent scouting? Most coaches answer yes. That's how Aware Sports began, to solve the video challenges in baseball and softball. Whether using their multi-angle fixed camera system or their mobile software, Aware empowers coaches to maximize every aspect of video all in one comprehensive solution. Their users range from MLB teams and reigning collegiate national champions to strong high school programs and literally everything in between. So the real question becomes, will you turn video into a powerful tool to elevate your program or stick with the status quo? You can find out more information at awaresports.com. That's awresports.com. Thanks for listening. This episode is sponsored by Netting Pros. Netting professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Netting Professionals specializes in the design, fabrication, and installation of custom netting for backstops, batting cages, dugouts, BP screens, and ball carts. They also design and install digital graphic wall padding, windscreen, turf, turf protectors, dugout benches, dugout cubbies, and more. Netting Professionals is an official partner of the ABCA and continues to provide quality products and services to many high school, college, and professional fields, facilities, and stadiums throughout the country. Netting Professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Contact them today at 844-620-2707 or info@nettingpros.com. Visit them online at www.nettingpros.com or check out Netting Pros on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn for all their latest products and projects. Make sure to let CEO Will Miner know that the ABCA sent you. Now on to the podcast. This week's ABCA podcast is an on-location episode from Grand Junction, Colorado for the JUCO World Series. It was my first time in Grand Junction, and it did not disappoint. You can see why college coaches rave about Grand Junction. It's another bucket list item for any college baseball fan. I got there a day late coming in from Lewiston, Idaho, so I wasn't able to get to every coach. In this episode, we'll hear from Crowder's Travis Lalamond, Flodar's Preston McDonald, Johnson County's Eric Horner, Georgia Highlands' Dash O'Neill, and Blinn's Dusty Hart. Congrats to Blinn on taking home the title this year. It's Coach Hart's second junior college title. As always, I appreciate the coaches for taking time out of their schedules to sit down with me. Let's welcome everyone to the podcast. Here with Travis Lalamond, Crowder head coach since 2005, had 9 region, 8 championships, 5 trips to the World Series, over 800 wins, 49-13 this year, and then 19-4 in conference. Yeah. Congrats.
Thank you. Been a good run.
Yep. Big milestone victory this spring as well, correct?
Yeah. My wife keeps track of that, and they had that. So that was pretty neat. Kids did it, but 801 was better because that made we were moving on to the region tournament.
What's the strength of your team this year? I mean, you're over 1,000 OPS. It looks like a 1.48 whip, so obviously pretty good on both sides.
Yeah, definitely the offense. I think that's where we start. That's our table setter for us, and if we can get out of the gates offensively, you know, that's what makes us go. But our starting pitching, is efficient. You know, it's not overwhelming. They've been very efficient, you know, but not dominant in any stretch, really. But our back end of our bullpen's been really good and held down leads. So, you know, our formula for success is – you know, hopefully go separate ourselves early, give ourselves a chance to pitch the way we need to. We'll get some swing and miss when we need, but, you know, a lot of soft contact in play is what kind of goal is early. We got some back end guys that can go punch some guys out. So, you know, hopefully our offense does what it did last week at Seminole to get us here. You know, we separated ourselves with some big innings and, you know, just alleviated a lot of stress off the pitching staff.
Well, you have to have swing and miss guys for this ballpark, correct?
Every time I've been here, for sure. And sometimes that's not even enough. So, you know, you just got to find a way to, you know, manage each inning. You know, sometimes a two, depending on the day and depending on the flow of the game, sometimes a two-run inning is like a zero. So, You know, if you can limit big innings here, though, that definitely is big. And, you know, if you can go put them up, I think that's the old thing, right? Score big or put up big innings and prevent big innings. But really here, if you're the home team, which we are tomorrow, and I guess a talented club like Dusty's, you know, you better separate yourself early.
What are some differences or similarities between this year's team and maybe some teams in the past that have gotten here?
You know, in the past, in 22, obviously we had the second rounder on the mound. You know, we had the dominant starting pitching. You know, our starting pitching is good. I'm not taking anything away from those guys. But we don't have that one guy you just run out there and say, here. But offensively, we're very similar, but I think we've got a little bit more lineup length. You know, we go all the way through the bottom on given days where, you know, there's some guys that are dangerous, you know, throughout that lineup, and I think that shows in the numbers. And we've been able to produce all the way throughout the lineup, and I guess that's where that's coming from for me. We've played a very good schedule, played Iowa Western early, played Johnson, you know, so we've played some good people along the way, and our league was very, very talented, especially on the mound. So we're battle-tested. That doesn't mean anything as far as equivalent to wins out here. You got to go play, and it's inning by inning here, you know, so that's just what it is.
And I was going to ask you that about scheduling. You do that on purpose to challenge your guys early?
100%. The kids from the start, we'll start talking about our February schedule. And, you know, that's just what we say. You know, and our league's good. But you really want to challenge yourself in February. And that's the part of the schedule you have more control over. You know, you have to play your conference schedules. You don't have control over if it's an up or down year. But, you know, scheduling the people we do, there's not very many down years with Johnson, not very many down years with Iowa Western. So, you know, it's going to be a challenging series. You know, there's no false confidence coming out of that. You know, we had some hiccups, we had some ups and downs, but that's what helped us. You know, we were 5-5 coming out of that series, and 8 of our first 10 games were against those two clubs. So it kind of set in motion a really good precedent and standard of how we needed to play if we wanted to win.
You schedule a bet early every year because you played there and coached there?
That's it. That's it. Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, you know, it's
the other for you, by the way, to do that.
I love it. And the other thing, too, is they're one of the few teams that will play us a single nine and a single nine because we're so close and do it that early. Because what I like is, you know, it's early. It's next year will be January 30th. So if you look at it from my perspective is you got 1-9, you reset. Go back to the drawing board. You got a day in between and figure it out. So you're not rushed with – this year we ended up with the doubleheader. But you're not rushed with the doubleheader. And I think that's just some teaching points with everybody's young in junior college, you know. So you get an opportunity to just slow down a little bit. And maybe there's something that was missed. Maybe there's something that they missed that, you know, as coaches we pride ourselves on covering everything. Maybe there's something they missed and we have to revisit. Well, you're not in the whole two games whenever that happens. So one of the few teams that plays us in a single nine, and I did play there, so that's a big part of it, and coach there as well.
Roster's mostly Midwest kids. This is a typical size roster for you two every year?
Yeah, it's a little larger right now, you know, because we had some, you know, still, I guess, some COVID, you know, we had some third-year guys and stuff like that. So it's a little larger than what we're used to, but for the most part, you know, we're right around that 40, 45 mark, you know, pretty much every year with some red shirts that, you know, to come in and develop. But, you know, this year it was a little bit, you know, 48, something like that, just because of, you know, some leftover guys and great kids, you know, did a good job. So I'm going to keep them and, you know, give them an opportunity to move on.
How is it having Jennifer on staff?
It's fantastic. You know, we just did an article with the Joplin Globe and, you know, we talked about that and,
you probably don't get the same information, though, that you might if it's a different trainer, though, correct?
Well, no, it's a lot tougher, man. It's a lot tougher. I can't get away with anything
because I got to go home. My trainer than anybody else.
Yeah, I got to go home with her, so I can't go against anything she does. I got to go home with her and put up with that at night if I do. So it's fantastic, and we talked about it. You know, our son's 9, you know, so he's very vested in the program as well, matter of fact. But, you know, we talk about it. We used to see each other coming and going. She'd be leaving for something. I'd be coming home. So getting to see each other every day is rewarding.
Awesome. Did you take over for Rourke?
No, I did not. There were two guys in between. Andy Summers coached there for 4 years. Then Chip Durham, 3, and I was Chip's assistant. And I took over when Chip went to Nicholls State.
Still some of the best junior college stories I've ever heard.
Oh, my gosh. They're still around, too. Still around,
keep,
for sure.
Keep those alive. How's it feel to have the field named after you?
Well, it's humbling. I mean, you know, they came and asked me, and I said no four different times. I said, no, I don't want that kind of pressure. And then they came back and just talked about, you know, what it really meant, and I was flattered. So it's neat. You know, I take a lot of pride in it, but, you know, I threw the family section in there. You know, it's Lalleman Family Field, and that doesn't represent my family. It represents, you know, our program as a family and the players that have played for me. And I said that at our at the field naming ceremony, and a lot of the kids, I think, understand that, and that's how we run our program. So I am very proud of that as well.
For people that don't know much about junior college baseball, what would you tell them right now if they're watching?
Boy, I mean, just look out here. This is, you know, I mean, we got 10 of the best teams in the country, and you know, every year, obviously, they've earned something to get here. But, man, this is what a level. And you know, I was asked the other day, you know, what would you tell somebody looking at four-year to JUCO? You're going to know a lot better about what four-year you fit at after 2 years of junior college baseball. And, you know, I've been doing this, you know, my whole career. I'm a JUCO guy, and I love JUCO baseball. So I'm a big fan. The turnover doesn't bother me, but, you know, it's not even the games. It's the weeks of practice and the days of practice that you have. You're not limited to 6 weeks in the fall. There's a lot of development to be had here.
Plus, the quicker turnaround helps a little bit, too, sometimes.
Yes, yes.
Those of us that coached at four-year schools, if you make a mistake here or there, you might be with that person for 4 years.
That's a very good point. Very good point. And we kind of pride ourselves on moving guys on to the next level. And, you know, I think that's a fun demographic of it, too. You know, getting to connect with these guys. You know, I was just sitting in the stands with, you know, a few guys that have came to campus to watch us practice or play. And, you know, sitting with them on the outside looking in until tomorrow, obviously, just talking about players. I like that aspect of it. It gets busy, but I do like it, and I enjoy that part.
You got here on Wednesday. You've been here multiple times before. How was the prep to get ready for tomorrow? Easy, hard, challenge them?
You know what? There was a couple challenging days. You know, we tried to challenge them, especially, you know, with, you know, just acclimation, first of all, to the climate. Second of all, today is more of a recovery-type practice was what we call it. You know, pretty light. You know, we worked some double cut stuff yesterday and got the outfielders moving around. And, you know, guys were sore on Thursday after a light workout, you know, on Wednesday. So we needed to get them acclimated because with our side of the bracket, you know, and Dusty could tell you too, the good part is, you know, you don't play till Sunday. The tricky part could be, you know, you keep winning, you got to play 4, maybe 5 days in a row. And you know, so you got to condition them to be ready, but you got to rest them and recover them enough to be able to handle that workload as well.
With the elements a little different, we saw it earlier, outfielders have to play so deep. Yeah. What type of responsibility then do the middle infielders have?
Well, you know, we did a fly ball communication today, as a matter of fact. And, you know, we talked about the left field wall and how to play it in left and, you know, making sure the center fielder converges on it. But, you know, the infielders are going to have to turn and run. You know, I've seen 4 or 5 balls get down because the outfielders are so deep and, you know, miss hit balls. Most of them probably would have been down anyways. But, you know, it's going to come down to maybe taking a chance on positioning with an outfielder here or there in those conditions because a ball over your head might get out or be a double anyway. So there's probably going to be some chances after watching some of this stuff of what we might try to do based on the approach of the hitter. And, you know, with the stuff we have on the mound.
Any other shout-outs before I let you go?
You know, shout-out to just everyone here in Grand Junction, man. Our host, John, has been great, you know, new to us this year. My athletic director and my administration's here. But, you know, huge shout-out to Grand Junction and the committee, man. Just seeing everybody and what a banquet, what a special event last night. And, you know, our kids are enjoying it. So always ran first class.
Well, thanks for your time, Coach.
You bet, man.
When did you guys get out here?
We got to Denver Tuesday night, and then we got to Grand Junction midday Wednesday.
You drive from Denver?
Yeah, took a bus. So last time we took vans. You talk about a nightmare.
Oh, buddy.
Yeah. Luggage for.
Well, you've probably never done mountain driving, have you?
The drive wasn't the bad part. It was fitting 38 people in vans with all their luggage.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
We did that trip when I was coaching at Iowa to save money. We were going to play in Fresno.
Yeah.
And to save money, me and one of our other assistants drove our baseball equipment and some bags out from Iowa City to Fresno. It's 27 hours.
Yeah.
We split it up on the way out there, which was fine. We went and watched Kyle DeSouthern. He, the guy I was with had played for us and then was coaching with us, but he had played at College of Southern Idaho.
Yeah.
So we went to the northwest corner of Colorado. We went to Vegas and recruited a little bit, and then we got to Fresno. But we had a midweek game that week after that week. He and I, we got done Sunday night. We go back to the hotel, shower, eat. We get in the car. We were in the vehicle for 27 straight hours. 27, just, I drive for four. And that, the drive through, he was from Montana, so he could do mountain driving.
Yeah.
I was not comfortable driving through Colorado.
Yeah,
like the Douglas Pass, like I was like, I don't like with no guardrails and you can see straight down the mountain. Like, I was like, I am not comfortable with this.
Yeah.
He's like, I got it. I'm like,
that wasn't fun. It wasn't fun.
It's all what you do, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what college baseball coaches do.
You got it, man.
Here's Preston McDonald, head coach and athletic director at Florence Darlington. Been with the program since 2009, seven consecutive seasons of 40-plus wins and closing in on 600 wins. So, congrats.
Thank you, sir. You
guys played great last night. How'd you feel about last night?
Man, I was just really proud of how we showed up. You never know how your team is going to respond when they get out to Grand Junction. And, you know, you got 10 of the best teams in the country. Everybody's playing well at the right time. And you don't know if, you know, having all the, you know, all the fans in the stands, if your team's going to have a bunch of nerves or if they're going to be loose or if they're going to come ready to play. You, obviously, you hope and you try to prepare them to play their best baseball, but you never know what you're really going to get. So I was really proud of how we jumped out to a fast start offensively. And that allowed our starting pitcher to really kind of settle in, and he gave us five strong innings. Bullpen was good. You know, wish we would have continued to have some good at bats the last five innings, but we kind of gave some ABs away there. And
Is that a typical offensive game for you? I thought you did a really good job of putting pressure on them offensively. Like as a person that's been around baseball forever, I thought you guys had some great reads on balls that dropped into the outfield. It's not just stealing bases, but taking extra bases on balls that are hitting in the outfield that maybe some other teams don't take those chances.
So we feel like we're pretty athletic, and base running's a part of the game that we actually start working on early in the fall. I mean, we're trying to go first to third on every single. We really want to work hard on balls in the dirt. We take a lot of pride in our reads, whether we feel like, you know, we can steal off this pitcher because he's slower to plate, or whether he's tipping something, or whether, you know, we can run on the catcher. That's something we do take a lot of pride in. And, once we got a little bit of a lead, we felt like it was kind of like a shark, you know, seeing blood in the water, man. We wanted to continue to be aggressive and try to put that thing away.
And you said it, you know, you get 10-1 and you're trying to push it for the 10 run, and you could see the guys got out of their approaches a little bit, because if they would have just stayed, that your guys' swings were so good early where
Absolutely.
You could tell guys got just a little bit. Did you say anything to the guys or just kind of let it play out?
Yeah, maybe after they put up a couple zeros in a row, we're like, hey man, you know, we got some guys with helmets flying off when they're swinging now, you know, instead of just kind of sticking with the approach that we had early on. And we did talk about it, and there's been times this year where we've done that, where we feel like, you know, oh, we got a big enough lead, we can take our foot off the gas and kind of coast. You know, even the energy in the dugout wasn't the same, you know, after we got the 10 runs. We've talked a lot this year about being a team that can put somebody away. You know, we want to be able to put somebody away. So be able to finish. We obviously didn't do that last night.
Yeah, but you still finished. Like, I give you a lot of credit. I've watched a lot of games. There's a lot of games where it's 10-1 and now it's 10-9 and then it's 11-10 and you're down. But you guys did a good job of staying with
it,
because that got tight late.
I think our relief pitching.
You did a good job last
night. We did a really good job of limiting some damage, because we stopped playing defense too. Not only did you stop hitting, we stopped playing defense. And And we did a really good job of limiting those guys to just one run an inning for a couple innings there to you know keep it at 10-4. But you know I think that's one of the reasons why we got a little complacent is because our bullpen's been so good. Our bullpen's been so good this year. I'm thinking back. We talked about it about three quarters of the way through the year when we're up with 9 outs to go, we haven't lost. So. I think that's why, you know, our guys got a little complacent. They felt like it was over.
You know, your guys have really good swings, like top to bottom, like 1-9, great swings. Do you break their swings down when they get on campus in the fall or just kind of let them go? How do you deal with that? Because I thought good setups, good timing, good swings from 1-9 out of your guys.
Yeah, as a head coach, you want to have your hand in a little bit of everything. But for me, I got great assistant coaches. I think that's where it all starts. Coach Kamel has been with me all 15 years. I've been the head coach here, and he's our hitting coach. And, we don't really have the cookie cutter approach where we try to make everybody look the same. We want different guys to have different setups and guys to have, different looks up there. But, we take a lot of pride in being able to use the whole field. We take a lot of pride in having a gritty two-strike approach. We want to make sure that we can score in a bunch of different ways. Can we run the ball out of the yard? Can we hit behind runners? We're running on third and less than two outs. We want to be automatic in driving that run in. Can we drag bunt when we want to? Can we steal when we want to? Right. So, we want to have as many bullets in our gun as possible. And I think that makes us a better offensive club. But, Coach Kamel does a tremendous job with our hitters. They've worked really, really hard this week. Over at I think it's called Blue Chip Baseball, the indoor facility, and I think that's made a big difference for us. Instead of just going out here, outdoors in Grand Junction and letting these guys take BP on the field and see how far they can hit it, they've been working on velocity, and working on some different stuff inside, and I think that made a big difference last night. And then Coach Tavi Smalls. As far as our bunting game and running game, that's who's in charge of that. And, I don't know if it's a coincidence or not, but every year he's been here, we've set a new school record for wins. So, he feels like it's pretty easy. We went to World Series his first year, then we win 49 games the second year, 50 the next, and now we're up to 52 this year. So he feels, man, this is easy. So, but now he's so positive and does a tremendous job with our infielders and base runner in a small ball game. So, in terms of, kind of making sure these guys are, mentally prepared, not beating themselves up. I think both of those guys do a really good job of, on the mental side of things as well.
So is bullpen maybe difference for you guys this year? Is it similar to teams you've had in the past? Or what are some of the differences or similarities to teams you've had in the past?
Yeah, I think it all starts with starting pitching for sure. We've had just three guys that have been really, really good for us all year. But then you look at our depth and the depth is, I think, like you said, a little bit different this year than we've had in the past and has really made our bullpen strong. But a guy like Derek Duvall that came in last night and threw three innings, and I'll be honest, he didn't look anything like what he normally looks like. He's normally 90, 92 with high spin rate, fastball, and he gets a lot of swing and misses and a lot of pop-ups, and, that just wasn't what he was last night. But he threw the ball over to plate enough and threw, three innings with no earned runs. And I don't think he felt like he threw well, but he's the guy we've kind of given the ball to, late in games, and I think he hasn't given up an earned run since like March the 5th, something like that. So he's just been outstanding for us. But we've got some other guys that have been really good for us throughout the year. Matthew Drivers had a tremendous season in the bullpen for us. We brought in Michael Gibson to throw an inning last night. He's going to start game three for us. We felt like that was a bullpen day for him, what we've done in the past is. We've saved pitching, and why are you saving pitching when you don't get past game two? It didn't make much sense for us. So,
but that's the right call. It's a bullpen day. He was going to throw today. He was going to throw yesterday anyway.
Absolutely.
You might as well let him go get comfortable out on the mound.
Absolutely. Well, even if we had to throw in more, we would have just kept him in the bullpen for the rest of the tournament. We were going to find a way to make sure we won the first one. And, you know, there's no reason to save pitching for next year, you know. So we want to try to, you know, win a game at a time and go a game at a time.
You have 32 on your roster. So is that on purpose, smaller roster? I mean, I can't tell you last time I saw low 30s on the roster, which I'm a fan of.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I can, once you hear this, I don't know if you'll be a big fan of it, but we start to fall with 55. And so we'd have a larger roster. That's what our school requires of us. And,
yep.
You know, and I'd rather be closer to 45 to start the fall,
but yep.
Just, you know, because of junior college, and it's a little bit different. You know, you miss on some guys, and then you have attrition for all kinds of different reasons, right? You'll lose some guys. But, you know, we started the year with 34, and we had two guys get hurt as soon as they came back from Christmas break, and those were some big blows to us, you know, to lose those guys. And then, you know, one of the guys that actually has been with us all year hasn't thrown a single inning, and honestly, he's good enough to be our ace, actually. I mean, he's coming back next year. He's a big left-handed arm, and we're really excited to have him back. But, you know, he worked really hard coming back from Tommy John. We thought we were going to get something out of him the second half of the year, and it just didn't work out. But, you know, he's here charting pitches and kind of getting a feel for things. But yeah, I think having a roster of you know, 30, 32 guys is a good number for us. This season, we were able to get all 17 of our position players at least 60 plate appearances. And I think that was a really valuable experience for them. I'll use this as an example. My starting shortstop got hit in the face by a ground ball on Wednesday and broke his nose. We thought the doctor was going to tell him he couldn't play. He needed surgery. He still needs surgery, but the doctor told him, you're good to play. You can get surgery after the tournament. So if we had our backup shortstop and only had 5 at-bats on the year, you know, he wasn't going to be prepared for this. So we wanted to make sure that if somebody went down, the next guy in line was prepared. So that's why we did that. And then, you know, every you know, pitcher's had at least 10 plate appearances at least 10 appearances on the mound other than the guys that maybe had an injury or two. So we felt like spreading out innings, spreading out at bats was the right way to do things, and we were still able to find a way to win, you know, 52 games to this point. And you know, it just kind of shows what our depth is like.
What has the state of South Carolina meant to you?
Say that again, sorry.
State of South Carolina, what's it meant to you?
Man, so I'm from, born and raised in South Carolina, and I'm from Sumter, about an hour from Florence, and I went to Coker College over in Hartsville, about an hour from Sumter, about 30 minutes from Florence, and you know, so I've been there my whole life. So, you know, South Carolina, I just, you know, that area, I couldn't imagine living anywhere else. You know, that's the place we recruit from the most, obviously, right? You want to be able to recruit your state, you know, but on this, you know, other
you
side
still have
of things,
some outliers on your roster. One of your better players is from Oklahoma.
Yeah, he's a good one, man.
He's good.
He's good.
He's really good.
You know, and the great part about it is, you know, he's got such a great family. His dad sent me an email when he decommitted from a Division I school in Texas, and they're originally from North Carolina. And so it's kind of a cool story. I don't usually look at those recruiting emails. I just kind of delete them and ignore them. And but that one, for some reason, I looked at, and I got on the phone with them as soon as possible.
There's some good players that come out of Edmond.
Yeah, I tell you what.
At Western. Oral Roberts always had good players.
Yeah,
from Edmond.
Absolutely. We beat out some really good teams for him. excuse me. We beat out some really good teams for him. And, you know, the family actually was real familiar with the Carolinas, and I think his sister goes to Campbell.
That's why it's always worth a call.
It worked
you never
well,
know.
Man.
It's always worth a
well.
Call so, or a reach back.
You know, he's been such a huge part of our team, and I had 4 hits last night, you know.
It seemed like every time
wasn't a surprise.
There was traffic, he was up.
Oh, man, yeah. You know, he as far as baseball IQ, I mean, he's one of the best we have. His dad was a coach, and he's just very, very talented, but, you know, works really hard too. So the kid's got a really bright future.
You got into coaching while you were still in college, correct?
Yeah, I got hurt. So, you know.
Funny how life works.
Yeah, it is kind of crazy how it works. My second year at Coker, I was just a little backup infielder, didn't play a whole lot. But and, you know, I hurt my elbow. And I got to a point where I was like, man, I just, you know, I don't know if it's going to be worth continuing to play. You know, I'm not good enough. I'm not going to be a professional baseball player. So I couldn't play that summer. So I ended up coaching like a rec team. And that's kind of how I got into it. I kind of got the itch. And then the next year, I became the head coach of a Legion team. And, man, we were awful. 1-21 that year. The next year, we went 21-8. And I don't think that program had ever won more than 4 games in their history in a season. So that was pretty special. And at that point, I was like, man, I think this might be something I want to do. I thought I wanted to be an attorney prior to that. And
I was going to be a brain surgeon.
Yeah, it's crazy how things work out, right? And but my college coach, he actually called me a few days ago. And, you know, one of his former players that played before me, he recruited from Iowa Western. And he wanted to make sure, you know, the guy reached out and wanted to introduce himself and, you know, wanted to say hey. So it was pretty cool. But, you know, I mean, I credit a lot to him. Even when I was playing, he got me to throw BP. I mean, I've never thrown BP before, and so I had to learn how to throw BP when I was in college, right? And you know, I'd take ground balls, and then you know, I'm the one throwing BP out there. He let me coach third base when I was in college. I mean, it was kind of wild how it worked out. You know, you got a 18, 19 year old, 20 year old over there coaching third base in a Division II game. I mean, you know, so. The experience I got there, I thought really
you got ahead of
really
the curve, honestly.
Yeah,
like for me, it's a great story because you were able to start much earlier in a great way.
Yeah.
A lot of guys don't get that opportunity where people are like, sure. Well, I should have kept playing. Well, you had the opportunity to get in your coaching career much earlier, which is great because your timeline's much longer than a lot of other guys at that point.
Hey, absolutely. You know, and then Coach Hudson over at Florence Arlington Tech, you know, gave me my first opportunity. And I felt like I really wanted to get into college coaching. I thought evaluating players and recruiting was something that really intrigued me. So I thought, you know, maybe I want to be a pro scout and be able to do something like that. And then it's like, nah, I think I like the teaching aspect and being able to motivate players and be able to build your team how you want to build it. And so I didn't really think high school coaching was for me because, I mean, you're kind of stuck with what you got there. You know, so anyway, he gave me an opportunity, and then after 1 year, he retired and moved down to the beach. And you know, that the gig is part time at Flodar at that point, and there wasn't a whole lot of interest from many people around. I mean, you know, my first year as the head coach, we went 25-27, so it wasn't like this was a program that was. You know, beating you know, some really good teams. Most of the players were from South Carolina at that point, you know, so we've been able to slowly build. We finally got our own field on campus in the spring of 2020, COVID year. So you talk about being tough to recruit. You know, I mean, you don't even have your own field. So so it's been good, man, to see the program evolve over the years. The school's been great to me, so I've been loyal to them and really happy with where we're at.
For a young coach trying to get into it, how much would you stress going to work other colleges' camps?
Yeah, I think that's big. You know, when I was younger, you know, I did the Clemson camp with Coach Leggett, and you know, that was pretty neat. But I think networking, you know, it's more about who you know than anything, right? So being able to network and being able to learn from other coaches as well. I remember learning a lot just being around some of these older coaches. Like, oh, I'm gonna write that down. I'm gonna take that back with me. At some point, I'm gonna use that if I'm ever a coach, right? So that's kind of how my mind worked when I was younger. So I think that's really valuable. I think younger coaches, you know, I know they're wanting to be able to make it work financially, but sometimes you gotta bite the bullet and find a way to make it work, right? I mean, I made $3,000 a year as an assistant coach at Florence Arlington Tech my first year. I mean, that's it. So I taught I had a degree in history, so I taught at Robert E. Lee Academy, elementary computer lab, my first 2 years, just to be able to make it work. So, you know, just a small stipend, and that's the way it kind of works. And now, you know, I'm full time at the school, also the athletic director, and that's the way college baseball works. Sometimes you kind of have to, you know, find a way to make it work, you know. And I was very blessed to have a great family who really helped support me financially during that time, because I wasn't making enough money to be able to do it on my own. So that's been a blessing for sure.
Any other shout outs you want to give before I let you go?
Nah, you know, so you know, my Legion coach is kind of a legend, and you know, Wally Jones in Sumter, and he just got inducted into the University of South Carolina Hall of Fame, and he was a player there. But the Legion post in Sumter, man, he's known for winning over there. But his mind worked a little different, and I've always had some really good conversations.
When you say different, what do you mean, how his mind worked different?
Yeah, so I mean, he just looks at the game a little bit different than other people. You know, he's always trying to find an edge, I think is the best way to put it. You know, he would go watch you know, spring training and see some of the stuff that they do, and a lot of coaches, if a player doesn't do something right, and this is something I learned from him, if a player doesn't do something right, the coach gets really upset with the player and says, man, you got to be able to do this. And the way he looked at it was, if they didn't do it right, maybe I didn't teach them the right way to do it well enough, right? So it's just little things like that I kind of picked up from him. And you want to be tough on your players at times, but other times, you got to also kind of look in the
mirror. They're trying. I mean, that's the thing. Like, they're trying.
Baseball's a tough game, man. You know?
They're trying.
You know? But you know, maybe we should do a better job of teaching them, you know, how to do things the right way and look in the mirror a little bit. I'm so excited to be out here. You know, we're so proud of the guys to get that first win under our belt, and I know they got a little chip on their shoulder from being the 8th seed. They thought they were going to be a little bit higher, but I didn't mind it. You got to beat everybody out here anyway, right? I was happy with how they came out and performed last night, and hopefully we'll take that into the next game.
Thanks for your time, Coach.
Appreciate
you. Good luck the rest of it.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right, here with Eric Horner, head coach, Johnson County, 21st season with the program, 4th season as head coach. Most wins to start a coaching career in the Kansas Jayhawk Conference. Back-to-back World Series appearance, 53-11 and 29-4 in conference, and you and I go way back.
Yeah, we do. I appreciate you having me out.
Did you think you'd be at Johnson County this long?
It's a great place. We get great support from our administration, and it's a great place to raise a family. So I don't know that was my kind of end goal or where I thought I would be, but it's been a great 21 years, and don't really see myself leaving anytime soon.
What'd you take coming out of here last year?
It was just the experience. You know, it wasn't so much for me, but it was just for our kids. Grand Junction does such a great job with this event. And last year, I think our eyes just got too big, and we kind of got, you know, sucked into the limelight of it all and forgot to play baseball. And, you know, this year, when you have maybe 15-ish players returning, they know what to expect, and they're here with a goal and a mission.
Did you tweak the routine for them coming out here this year? Did you do some things different this year than last year?
No, we did about the same thing. I mean, I didn't chalk up last year's poor showing to kind of what we did off the field as far as practices and when we got out here and things like that. You know, I just think, again, you know, this place is so great. You know, our kids feel like big leaguers, and, you know, sometimes when it's your first time coming, you know, you just forget to play baseball and you just kind of soak it all in. And again, the experience factor of these kind of things are just can't top them.
What were your thoughts on the game yesterday?
Well, I mean, from an offensive perspective, I don't know that we could have done much better. So, you know, our guys really stuck to the plan. We're kind of old school. We work gap to gap. We hit line drives. We take pitches. We move guys over. And, you know, they stuck to the plan. And they hit, I think, 3 mistakes out of the park and used kind of the lighter air here to their advantage, and I thought we had good approaches all day long.
And that's probably the key to hitting at a park like this too, is staying short with your approach, because if you get long, a pop-up's going to be a pop-up anyway. It's not going to go out.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, we're old school. We really want line drives. You know, we want contact. We want balls in play. And our guys do a really good job of, we've been harping on them for so long that they executed that plan really good and hit a lot of doubles, you know, hit a couple out of here. But, you know, we've got a good group, and they stick with the plan. They don't try to do too much. Kind of the turning point for us when was everybody kind of figured out what their skill set was, and they didn't try to do too much. They stayed within what they were capable of doing. And once they all kind of figured that out and learned that, we've kind of had a really good run here.
When do those conversations start with your new guys? As soon as they get there on campus?
Yeah, as soon as they get here. You know, we start up August 10th, which is our first official date. We take that first week to 2 weeks. It's kind of a lot of slow playing, but it's chalk talk. It's explaining our culture, explaining the way we do things. And so it's a long process. So, you know, when did they master it? I'm not sure they fully mastered it, but they've been doing a really good job. And it kind of clicked for Amarillo. We didn't do too well in Amarillo, and to me, you really learn from your struggles. We went 2-2 there, got beat up pretty good from an offensive standpoint, so I think they really started to buy in and kind of figure out who they were then.
Strength of the team, pitching and hitting this year? Because it looks like pitching numbers are good too.
I think our strength is we can do it all. So, you know, in baseball, something's going to slump. You know, you're not going to have all three phases. Wind could be blowing in, wind could be blowing out. And the nice thing about us is, you know, we can pitch it, we can defend it, and we can hit it. So if one's slumping, the other two's going to pick it up.
In your 21 seasons, what are some of the differences and similarities of this team to maybe some teams of the past?
You know, our best teams and our teams that have gotten here have really what I've been describing as like a goofball team. Like, this team loves each other. This team has fun. This team shows up because they love to play baseball. You know, we've had a lot more talented teams over the years that didn't get to Grand Junction, but just the bond they have, the fun they have, makes it really fun to come to the park, and I think that's a big reason why they got to where they are.
Upper 30 is a normal roster size for you all?
We try to shoot for no more than 40, yep. So we try to keep our numbers down, and, you know, with the COVID stuff and all the red shirts at the D1s coming back, it's kind of, you know, hard to really have a hard 40, but we do our best to try to keep our numbers low into that number.
For somebody that doesn't know something about the Jayhawk Conference, talk about the Jayhawk Conference a little bit.
It's tough, man. You know, I was a little worried with game one. I mean, we just wrapped up Sunday. We left Tuesday, so we had about 24 hours of a turnaround. And in our Elite Eight, or whatever you want to call them, I mean, there was four current ranked teams. There was the other four that were there were ranked at some point. So, man, it's a beatdown. You know, it's a gauntlet. I mean, we had kind of an easier road where we stayed in the championship bracket, then lost the first championship game and had to come back. But, man, it's a gauntlet. I mean, that's Brandon Stone's, I think, third start in like the last, I think, 9 or 10 days. So, man, it's tough.
You think it's better for guys, though, that you didn't have a lot of time off before you started to play again?
Man, that's a great question. I can see it both ways. You know, when we came, I think, in 2008 and 2014, we had like 3 weeks off. And that was a killer too. But, you know, I mean, I think Region 6 prepares us for this kind of baseball, because, I mean, I think we also ended our last two conference series were against KCK, who I think were 15th in the country, and Cali, who are always really good. I think they were like 20th in the country. And then we went right into the region and played all those teams. But it's a beat down, but, man, it prepares our team. And we want to play the best and get ready the best we can.
Did you switch your responsibilities once you got your head gig? I know two of your assistants played at Johnson County, so they're Johnson County guys. Did you switch your responsibilities at all?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I used to do all pitching and recruiting for the first 17 years, and then as I was the head coach, I still have my thumbprint on the pitching because it's what I know, but I also kind of bounce around into the hitting and the defensive side too, so I'm kind of just now just bouncing around. My assistant coaches are awesome. I've got a total of 5 of them, you know, and they've all got specialties. They're all younger than me, so it always makes me feel really old. But, man, they work their tails off, and most of them have played for me, so it's really nice that they kind of know how things work. And, you know, I can trust them to go do their thing, and their responsibility is going to get done. And they've done a great job, and, you know, we wouldn't be here without those guys.
What do you think the biggest changes with baseball are over the last 21 years? What's different now than when you first started?
I mean, to me, baseball is the same. You know, for us, we're old school. I get the technology, the data you need to kind of, so we use a little bit of that stuff. But we're more old school, and I don't think baseball's really changed. We move guys over. We bunt guys. We probably bunt more than anybody else. But what has changed is kind of the individual kids, the recruiting landscape, how we recruit has changed with the portal. It's more Division I thing, but that still affects us as well. Now, all of a sudden, once we got that figured out, now we're working on the NIL stuff, trying to figure out what in the heck that's about. So, man, it's really just kind of the recruiting. Whatever happens with D1 trickles down to us.
How much is Coach Shelley still involved? He seems like he's on vacation a lot now.
He's not involved. That guy worked. That guy had a really good, successful career. And, you know, he worked hard for a long time, and I think his wife just retired as well. So I think those two are kind of enjoying life. And I'm with you. Every time I see a picture with him, he's on some island or by some ocean. So I think he's just kind of loving life right now.
Any other shout outs? I know Hunter's here. Is the rest of your family here?
Yeah, my wife came. My daughter had to stay back and work. But, you know, I'd like to give a shout out to my wife. As a former coach, you know how much, you know, wives have to do, especially during the season. You know, they're like the single parent running kids around while I'm at a game recruiting or playing. So, you know, really appreciate my wife and my son and my daughter for allowing me to do this. And, you know, I miss a game or two of theirs, but, you know, they just fill me in when I get back.
Thanks for your time, Eric.
Oh, thank you for having me.
All right, here with Dash O'Neill, head coach, Georgia Highlands, eighth season as head coach, was assistant for 12 years at Chattahoochee Valley, 54-8 overall, 21-5 in conference, as we said, school record for wins.
Yeah, absolutely, by a long shot.
Yep, and you've been building this thing since you got there, so just kind of talk about that process from where you're at now to where you kind of started.
Sure. So, I mean, when I took over the program, it had only been in existence for 3 years. Mike Mara did a great job getting it off the ground, but they just hadn't had a whole lot of success. They hadn't had a winning season yet. So when I walked in the door, I think they were coming off of like a 28-33 type of year or something like that, you know, but I just knew from day one we had talent. I could see some guys that were still in the program that were good players, and I knew that we could build a nucleus around them. And really, it was just about establishing the same kind of culture that I had played under Greg Appleton when I was playing, that I was part of at Chattahoochee Valley, and convincing those guys that, you know, hey, look, we can win, and this is the blueprint for how to do that. And then year after year, we've just kind of built on that.
I mean, because you saw it as a player. You've won a national championship as mm-hmm. a player. Chattahoochee had all kinds of success. We're here 3-4 times.
Yep.
What kind of stuck out about those programs that maybe you didn't see at Georgia and are like, okay, this is where we can get to with the program?
You know, I think all championship caliber teams do similar things. Number one, they focus on the big things. They focus on, can you hit, can you throw strikes, can you play defense? And then they all have chemistry. I'll always remember in the fall 2001, I was at CSU and we had a kind of a team meeting, and our assistant coach at the time, Coach Massey, who was tremendous and still really successful at Brookwood down in Columbus, you know, he said, hey guys, what do you think is the most important thing? And we kind of just went around the room and did a round table, and to a man, every guy said chemistry. And that really stuck out to me. And so I think having chemistry and having a culture where your guys care about each other, they spend time together off the field, and they live with each other and they work with each other, I really think that's a big part of it. And then they got to suffer a little bit. You know, you got to put them through the ringer in the fall. You got to play good teams. You got to crush them in the gym. And, you know, I think if you do those things, you got a chance to be competitive.
I mean, what is that about the fall where you can develop, create some adversity for them?
Yeah.
I know everybody kind of has their own opinions. I agree with you on that.
Sure.
I think you need to create adversity for your players in the fall.
Yeah, well, we're getting athletes nowadays that, you know, baseball's their primary sport. They play a lot of travel ball. They know every time they're going to pitch. They know every time they're going to play. They don't have to show up if they're not in the game. You know, if you lose this week, well, we'll just play for another trophy next week. And, you know, and they kind of have that mentality. And so, you know, you have to create an environment where they have to compete and they have to get after each other, and the expectations are high if you're going to be able to develop some competitiveness. And I think that's the only way to build mental toughness. I have a wrestling background, and you know, and so I lean a lot on that, and I want guys that are tough between the ears.
How do you relate that to your players coming in? Because a lot of the kids that you get or have never gone through that. How do you kind of nurse them through that part of it? Well, or is it sink or swim?
I mean, it's you know, I warn everybody about it in recruiting. So I tell them straight off the bat in recruiting, hey, look, you know, you're not going to have a ton of fun in the gym with us. You know, you're going to have a lot of fun here. You know, we're going to play the game. We're going to do things the right way. But you're not going to enjoy the gym and some of those
I
aspects.
Think you develop enjoyment for that, though. Like
you do.
Those harder workouts, like I think over time, I think you actually end up enjoying those because you feel like you're getting something
it's
out of them.
It's the number one thing that when kids are gone, they call me and ask me if I can send them information on. So I agree. I think you grow together through that suffering, and it just builds a component of a team you can't get any other way.
And you've been here multiple times. What did you relay to your players coming here?
I mean, really, I think, and, you know, heck, I'm no expert, right? I mean, yeah, I've been here a couple times, but, I mean, this is my first go as a head coach, and all these other coaches out here have been here 3, 4, 5 times, and so I'm just a rookie, right? But I just try to tell them, look, the teams that are going to do the best are the ones that just come and play their game. If you try to change, you try to do something different, you try to play to the park, or you try to play to your opponent, you try to do all that stuff, you're probably setting yourself up to fail. Just go out and be yourself, have fun, enjoy this, and make the most of it, and play for your brothers, and, you know, good things might happen.
What was your preparation like this week while you're here?
I mean, the same as it would be at home. You know, you only get 50 minutes or an hour on the practice field, so, you know, you got to trim things down a little bit, but this time of year, we're not really practicing much longer than that anyway, so get out there. You know, get some swings in, take some ground balls, throw it around, you know, do good things, encourage good habits, and play hard.
What were your thoughts on the game yesterday?
I thought our guys did a great job. McClendon's really good. I mean, those guys were throwing fuzz. But I knew our hitters, and I knew we would have the ability to adjust and catch up. And I think the second time through the order, we started to make some adjustments. And, you know, they did what they did. But trip to Val was incredible. I mean, it's so hard out here to stop somebody from scoring, you know. And so for him to go out, and that's a really good team, to keep them to 3 hits over 8 innings was just – I mean, that was amazing. It was so fun to watch him go. So I thought they were a great team. I thought it was a great ball game. And I'm just glad that our guys were able to do their thing and come out on top.
What are some other strengths to your team this year?
You know, I think we do a lot of things well. You know, I think, you know, we've been a very good offensive team. I think we throw strikes. We usually make the routine plays. And I mean, that's really what I preach, you know. And I think my guys get mad at me because we'll sit there and they'll be asking questions. Guys, this is a simple game. Throw it over the plate, catch it if they hit it to you, and then put the ball in play. And if you do those 3 things, like, you're in most games. Sometimes you just, you know, you're going to get bushwhacked once in a while, but you're going to do that to some people once in a while too, you know. But just not to make it too complicated. It's a pretty easy game, you know, in terms of how you win. Now, it's hard to go out and execute, but, you know.
Your teams have been really good offensively over the years as an assistant, as a head coach. What are some keys to coaching hitters and also team offense?
So I can't say it the way that I would say it if I was talking to my guys, okay? But you have to walk up to the plate knowing that you're good. You have to walk up to the plate knowing you got a chance, and you have to believe in what you're doing, and, you know, you have to have a healthy disregard for the guy that you're competing against, and I think that's ultimately what competition is, right?
Yeah, it's the one-on-one battle between the pitcher and the hitter.
Yeah, so nothing. I certainly am not a guru. I don't have any swing tips for you. You know, I couldn't teach you.
But that's a great tip.
Flaws, you know,
that's a great tip because all of that goes away. Like all the stuff that you train for and train in the cage, all that stuff goes away once the game starts.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and, you know, the hitters have an advantage. They know where the pitchers are going to throw it. You know, they got to throw it to the catcher. All you got to do is stop it from getting there. You know, so, I mean, you got a little bit of an edge.
Two-way player in college, correct?
You could call it that, yeah.
In junior college,
yeah, I did some pitching. I think.
Do you think that helps you now as a head coach because you have been on that side of it? Because pitchers are a little different at times. Do you think that helps you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think I was so lucky. I mean, I did a lot of different things in college. I caught, you know, I pitched, I played some second base, you know, and so I think you take all of those things. I think what I really learned was. I really wasn't any good on the mound, and I still got people out. So I think what I learned was that if you just flip it up there, whatever garbage you've got, you've got a good shot at getting some guys out here and there. You know, so if I could get anybody out, and back then, I mean, Truett McConnell, I think, led the country in hitting my freshman year, and Young Harris was in our league, and Middle Georgia was in our league. I mean, those guys were monsters, you know. And so if I could get any of them guys out, then – My guys certainly got a shot because they're a hell of a lot better than I ever was.
You and I have similar academic tracks. So your undergrad in psych,
yeah.
Master's in sports management. Are you yep. still getting your counseling?
Well, so
working on it?
I finished the academic portion. I'll probably never finish the practicums and the internships. Yeah. It just requires so many hours. And
what
you know,
brought
as a coach,
you into that, though? What made you feel like, okay, I want to go get the counseling side of this, too?
Well, you can get fired out of coaching baseball in a weekend.
That is correct. You but know? Also with this generation of kids, like yeah. the counseling side of it does probably help a little
bit. It does. I mean, I really have a heart for it. I got to thank my mother a little bit for, you know, getting me into sports psychology. She was a teaching tennis pro, and she was always reading stuff on that, and so she kind of opened my eyes to maybe I should take a look at the mental side of it. And you know, I'm 5'5".
What's your favorite book?
It's The Mental Game of Baseball, Harvey Dorfman. I mean, I think that's the one, and then Heads Up Baseball. You know, I think
have you read Inner Game of Tennis?
Well,
since your mom's in
that's
tennis,
that's what she's read. And I haven't read that
I
one
would
specifically.
Highly recommend it. It's got a cult following among baseball coaches okay. because it talks a lot about external cues.
I'll definitely have to check that out then.
Yeah, tell your mom that
I
read it.
I will.
Inner Game of Tennis is awesome. Yeah, but that's where I started with both those books as well. They yeah. helped me more than anything as a player.
That's awesome. Yeah, I always kind of hoped that if I couldn't keep it, you know, couldn't stay in it as a coach, maybe I could get into it as a performance coach or something along those lines. And it's something I integrate in my program. I mean, we spend the first 15 minutes of every single practice talking about mental game and talking about just different, you know, just different tools they can use and things like that. And you'll see some of my guys do some of that stuff once in a while.
You spend much time in the classroom with them?
Every day. Well, okay, so in an actual classroom, in the fall, we do that a pretty good bit. We use our field as our classroom.
Yes.
So I have a whiteboard and, you know, so we do it there.
Pre-practice?
Yeah, pre-practice. It's off campus. So we kind of have to, you know, if we're on campus, we can use a classroom, but if we're off campus, we, you know, we just do it at the field.
How are you figuring out what you're going to address with them pre-practice?
You know, some of it is kind of a curriculum I've built, so I kind of have a weekly, this is kind of the theme as we go along, and then I always leave room for 1 or 2 days for me to kind of look at what's going around, see what's happening on the field, and then kind of try to find some concepts I can integrate that's like meaningful right now.
What are some other shout-outs before I let you go?
I mean, first of all, thank you to all my assistant coaches, okay? As a longtime assistant coach, you can't do this if you don't have good guys helping you. You know, James Williams and Dalton Cash are currently my guys, and they deserve a lot of the credit for our team being here. Brock Moss was my first assistant coach and was a big part of helping build this. Tucker Hughes recruited a lot of the guys that are here now, you know, and Todd Cole, Mike Goss, Rob Payne, you know, Caleb McElwaney, Sean Fitzpatrick, all those guys have helped. I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody, so, you know, I forget it. But the biggest shout-outs I could give are number one, to my wife and my kids, who I love very much, and they allow me to do this, and then to my dad and my mom and my grandfathers, who taught me how to play and encouraged me to play and always thought I was way better than I probably was, but gave me the confidence to be able to do this.
Was it a transition for you going from assistant to head coach? Because those of us that were assistants for a long time, you have to do a lot of stuff. Were you able to delegate to your assistants when you took over?
That
was a hard thing for me.
Yeah, you know, one of the great things about working with Adam was that he allowed me to do whatever I wanted to do. And the way we always described it was that, you know, we were kind of like co-head coaches. I was kind of the head coach of the position players, and he was the head coach of the pitchers. And so I think coming in the door, I had a lot of experience of having a lot of responsibility. But I knew I couldn't do it by myself. So the first thing I did was find a pitching coach. You know, that's why I hired Brock Moss. I needed a pitching coach. And so, you know, handing those things over, it's hard for me because I'm a very hands-on guy. So I'm really not the kind of guy that's going to say, hey, I noticed that Billy's not doing this. Go coach him up. I'm kind of going to go out there and say, hey, Billy, I want you to try this. Man, I've got great assistants, and it's been a pleasure seeing them grow because this is both their first year. So, you know, just having two first-year guys and being able to get here and just seeing them grow and seeing what they've
done
with our team.
Tell them it's not that easy.
Huh?
It's not that easy.
Oh, I've been telling them that the whole year. We were like, we won like our first 20 games, you know, and I was like, guys, it's not like this. Like, don't fool yourself into thinking this is the way it's going to go, you know. But baseball's a tough game. They'll find that out the hard way, I'm sure.
Thanks for your time, Dash.
Man, I appreciate you. Thank you.
You talk to the Baylor guys much? Some, yeah.
Zach Dillon and I coached together at Iowa a couple of different times.
Okay. I just talked to Mitch the other day.
Yeah, I like Mitch a lot. Mitch was always good to me when I was a young recruiter. He's really good to me. So
we've had some battles with him before. About 10 years. I think it was us or them for 9 out of 10 years.
Of course. All right, here with Dusty Hart, Blinn head coach, second season as head coach and back-to-back appearances here in Grand Junction. Spent 16 seasons at Grayson. 2008 national champs, and has over 700 wins and 42-16 this year, and then 29-6 in conference. So thanks for jumping on with me, Dusty.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you having me.
How was the milestone victory for you this spring?
You know, it's one of those deals you don't even think about it till somebody says something, you know, and so pretty neat. Glad it was this group. Really glad it was this group. You know, I had a lot of guys that trust me enough to come with me from Grayson to Blinn. And so it was only fitting that it would be with this group. So really happy about that.
And Blinn's been a little bit dormant before you got there. Obviously, the history of the program is phenomenal. But if you look, region title last one was 2001, and then World Series appearance was 2017. So you had it pretty set at Grayson. What brought you to Blinn?
You know, it was kind of one of those things I just couldn't turn it down. I mean, they showed me what they were investing in the program, and not many junior colleges are willing to do what they did with the locker room and the new facilities. And, you know, I was kind of ready for a new challenge, I think, too. You know, Grayson, I loved my time at Grayson. I have nothing but good things to say about it, but 20 years, if you count assistant, you know, that's a long time to be at one place. So just, you know, Blinn was intriguing because I think I knew what the power of the name could possibly be. And honestly, I wanted to see if we could get it there.
And so those guys coming with Grayson, from Grayson with you, obviously helped because they've been with you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was no doubt. You know, we won 40-something games my last year at Grayson. And so really, there was four that came with me that were sophomores last year, and then we still got a couple left over this year. They just helped me set the foundation, you know, what we want, what the locker room to be like.
Because you need that. I mean, obviously, that's a huge part of any team is what's going on when the coach isn't around. And so those guys helping communicate to the other guys, like, hey, this is the way coach wants things done.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the best teams I've ever had, you know, the coaches are the players are an extension of the coach. So especially in junior college, that's probably your biggest battle is getting them. Because, you know, we are a stepping stone to the next level. So you got to get guys to buy into where they're at and not necessarily look forward to where they're going.
Are you through the COVID guys now? Have all those guys gotten through?
Yeah, I think
so. Seems like most of the junior college guys that I've talked to, they all feel like those guys have moved on now.
Yeah, I think we have one guy, and he had a red shirt and a medical red shirt plus COVID. So we're pretty much through that stuff.
Do you have to have grown up in Texas to coach in Texas?
I think it helps. You know, I think Texans, if you're from Texas, you know it's big on relationships. And, you know, we couldn't do this without good relationships with select ball coaches and high school coaches. And Texas is too big a state to go see every single player. So you need help. I mean, it's never a job you do by yourself.
What's the strength of this year's team?
I think experience, you know, having come out here last year, is always huge. It's hard to get out here 2 years in a row. You know, early on in the season, we got punched in the mouth a lot. You know, I think we were 8-9 at one point. And so we just didn't handle being at the top very well. We thought we could kind of show up and just go through the motions and things were just going to happen for us. And I'm excited about the fact that they overcame that because I've seen that go both ways. You know, guys can go bad and not recover from it because baseball is such a mental game. So we're pretty tough. I think we're pretty tough and resilient too.
Did they take care of that themselves or did you have to kind of right the ship for them?
You know, I think it was probably a little bit of both. You know, I think we had to get the defense right early on in the season. We weren't playing real good defense, and we knew we had some hitters. We knew we had some arms, and it was just a matter of making plays behind those guys. And so, you know, we've moved the lineup up a little bit, a lot of bit really since day one. You know, just different guys playing different positions, and that's probably when we really took off, when we cleaned the defense up.
Over the course of your career, how many times the guys that you've started the year with are the same guys at the end of the year? How often does that happen?
It doesn't happen very often. I mean, it didn't happen last year, you know. In fact, we had a pitcher playing shortstop at the end of last year, you know, and it's just one of those things. Guys step up. And, you know, in 2008, when we won the national championship, our best hitter broke his wrist with 3 months left in the season. And so I tell the guys all the time, like, it doesn't matter. Talent doesn't matter. It's how you play the game. So he had 20 home runs when he broke his wrist. Best player on the team. And I don't think we lost a game in the postseason without him. So it took other guys stepping up and filling his role.
35 men on the roster. Is a small roster size by design?
Yes and no. I mean, I think we want to have 35 because it's the playoff minimum, you know, and you hate to have those meetings at the end of the season where you tell a guy they can't travel. And so that's really what we shoot for every year.
Is Brandon Larson the most famous alum of Blinn?
I would have to think so.
Because that's in my sweet spot. I played in that era. So I was at the World Series in 97 when he hit the walk-off against Matt Anderson.
Oh, really?
Right? I was there that night. So. He scouted. He and I have talked about that. He was scouting in the Midwest for a while, and I coached in the Midwest. So he and I talked about that.
If there's somebody more famous than him, I don't know. I don't know.
Those numbers are gaudy. Now, yeah. He was using a -5, but you still got to go out and do it. Those numbers he had at LSU were gaudy.
Unbelievable. Gorilla ball. This is a whole era.
What's the key to winning this tournament?
I think you got to pitch. I think, you have to pitch out here, and you have to move on quickly. Like, things can happen in a flash. You can have a 1 or 2 run game and blink and be down by 8. So I think you really have to have a short-term memory, and you got to stay in the moment. You know, you can't see somebody get upset, and then all of a sudden you think, oh, well, we're going to walk through this deal. I think you just got to be where your feet are and when I say win every pitch, I mean literally win every single pitch.
Yeah, because this might be the first time one of your pitchers gives up a pop-up that may go out of here, and you can't control that.
Correct. Yeah, and depending on the day inning, I mean, the wind can switch third inning, be blowing straight in, by the fifth inning, be blowing straight out. So it takes some luck. You know, anytime you got 10 teams, like especially the 10 that made it here this year, luck doesn't hurt, you know. But, yeah, I mean, it always comes back to pitching, in my opinion, the game of baseball. Just good catch play, you're going to have a chance to win out here.
You've won a national championship, said you got here on Tuesday. So what does this week look like? Is it rest and recovery? Is it we're still going to get after them to get ready for the game? How'd you handle that?
You know, we kind of wanted to get all the vacation-type stuff out of the way, you know, and go to the Mesa, did the Challenger game, which is unbelievable, just so much fun. But kind of get that stuff done and then remind them, you know, we're here on business. And hopefully they can get back locked in. But, you know, anytime you go a week in baseball without playing, you never know what's going to happen. So I'm excited to play. I know they're biting at the bit to get out there having the Sunday game. It's kind of hard sitting here watching everybody else play. But we'll be ready.
Any other shout-outs before I let you go?
Just Dr. Hensley and the administration at Blinn, you know, and the board. I mean, what a phenomenal job they've done with that place. And the support we have, second to none. Brenham, Texas, the city of Brenham, helping us get through the regional and super regional. I've been doing junior college. I'm a junior college lifer. I've seen every atmosphere and I've yet to see one that tops that place, so it's a pretty special place.
Good luck this week, Coach.
Thank you, sir.
Grand Junction's definitely a destination spot for any college baseball fan. It's breathtakingly beautiful in southwest Colorado next to the Utah border. Thanks again to all the coaches for taking time out of their schedule to sit down with me. Thanks again to John Litchfield, Zach Hale, Jim Richardson, Matt West, and Antonio Walker in the ABC office for all their help on the podcast. Feel free to reach out to me via email at rbrownlee@abca.org, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at @coachb_ABCA, or direct message me via the MyABCA app. This is Ryan Brownlee signing off for the American Baseball Coaches Association. Thanks, and leave it better for those behind you.
Wait for another.